Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and each week we are happy and excited to bring you cutting-edge information to keep you healthy and vibrant your whole life through. And we frequently share things about nutrition, about movement, about exercise, about lifestyle, environment, and I'm excited to bring here today a guest that's going to talk to us about a special topic which has to do with muscles. We haven't talked about that much before. And actually, you know, I'm looking at the M&M show. We're going to be talking about muscles and mitochondria and methylation. And we'll have a whole lot of great stuff to share with you to get you perspective about how you can actually feed your muscles with more energy as they age. Because a lot of people feel like it's natural to lose muscle mass as you age. And surely we see that. And we want to talk today about how it's not a mandatory effect of aging, and how mitochondrial function can be so important, and how we can actually feed those little mitochondria, get them to be more helpful and hopeful. So I'm going to introduce, we have two people on the line. One is Dawn Aubrey. She's one of my local buddies who lives here in Austin, and she's a certified clinical nutritionist. I've had her on the show before when we talked about immunity a couple of years ago, and she is working with Dr. Alan Miller. They're part of a company called Thorne Research Company, which I love. They provide really high quality supplements and do a lot of research into the quality of formulas and stuff, and they are really bound and determined not to have excipients and additives in their supplement line. We're not here to talk specifically about Thorne's supplement line. We're here to talk about specifically some of the things that you can do to keep your muscle mass moving and mobile throughout the rest of your life. So I'm going to allow Dawn to do justice to Dr. Miller's bio, because he has a lot of great background, and he's really well-researched in a lot of different areas. He's a naturopath and been in practice for over 25 years. So Dawn, why don't you say hello and introduce Dr. Alan Miller.
Hello. Yes, this is Dawn Aubrey, and I am so privileged to introduce Dr. Alan Miller. He's a graduate of the prestigious Bastyr Medical University, and he has been a practicing naturopathic physician for nearly 25 years. He has been with Thorne Research for 21 years, and he is very well authored. He has been writing on methylation for 17 years. Which is really pretty awesome, because it's something a lot of people are talking about these days, is methylation in the last probably 5 years that I know of. And Dr. Miller has been writing papers on it for nearly two decades. So we have quite the plethora of information in Dr. Miller to talk about muscle, mitochondria, and methylation.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And methylation, you know, when you say he's been writing about it for 17 years, you're right. It really, just in the last few years, does anybody even know what that is? And some people are going, huh, methyl what? What the heck is that? And you might have heard something called the MTHFR. It's a genetic mutation, for lack of a better word, that's related to methylation. And it's just recently gained some prominence, but obviously Dr. Miller has been researching it for quite some time. I first started looking at it about 2008-ish. And some people call MTHFR the expletive deleted gene, because when you spell it out, it looks like it's not a very nice abbreviation for a very nice expression.
Yeah, so if it were in a text in a text message, I would think, well, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, what? So let's just get in touch. Dr. Miller, I think your line is open now. Hello, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me today. Appreciate it. Hope all is well in Austin. The last time I was there, it was flooding and crazy.
Oh my goodness, you were here at the end of May, weren't you, for the IFM conference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got over that at the end of June, believe it or not. We had another month of that horrendous weather, and now we're into July, so it's kind of nice. It's nice to have sunshine again. Yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to you about, I know we don't even have methylation listed on here, but Dawn kept telling me about all the methylation. And, of course, methylation is related to mitochondrial function and muscle and energy. So why don't you just start by just, you know, because a lot of people have heard the term mitochondria, but a lot of people don't know what mitochondria are. And so what I would love to hear is just start with what the heck are mitochondria and what do they have to do with anything?
Well, mitochondria, the knowledge about mitochondria has really changed. And like I said, in my bio, you heard there that, you know, I've been a naturopathic doctor for 25 years. And in my training, we didn't know as much about the mitochondria as we do today. And it's just fascinating stuff. The mitochondria are what we used to think was the mitochondria made energy in the cell. And that was all we knew. The mitochondria are parts of each of our cells. There is an element in there called a mitochondria. In some cells, they look kind of like a kidney bean. But in other cells, they look more like a thread. In other cells, they look more round. And their appearance depends on what type of cell and what type of business that cell is in and what that cell is doing. But the main purpose is in the mitochondria is to take food, basically, or the elements of food, and break them down into their smallest components, and then basically to burn that, to use that as fuel, and to create something called ATP. And ATP is cellular currency. ATP is cellular fuel. That's what our cells use to create energy. So if you are making more ATP, you are more energetic. Your cells are more energetic, and they're healthier. The other really fascinating thing about mitochondria is, you know, the appearance of them changes depending on what type of cell it is, but the number of them also changes. The number is different depending on the type of cell that you're looking at. And and this is what really gets me. The average per cell, somewhere between 200 and 2,000 mitochondria per cell. Now this completely blows my original knowledge out the window, because, you know, we originally thought, yeah, there's a few mitochondria per cell. You know, 25 years later, we know that there are hundreds or even thousands, depending on the job of that cell and depending on how much that cell needs, how much energy that cell needs. So in liver cells, there's about 800 per cell. In neurons, there's 300 to 400, and those are fairly highly metabolic cells. Cardiac cells, the heart muscle, 5,000 mitochondria per cell. So what does that tell you about the cardiac muscle, about the heart muscle? You know, it's pumping constantly. It doesn't ever get a break, so it constantly needs to be creating more energy, and it's constantly utilizing that energy. So the energy turnover in the heart is just tremendous. So if you start thinking about what happens if this goes wrong, what if the mitochondria aren't working properly? What's going to get affected first here? Cardiac cells are going to be affected fairly quickly. And if you look at a lot of the dysfunction of cardiac type dysfunction, a lot of it is related to mitochondria. A lot of liver dysfunction is related to mitochondria. A lot of nerve dysfunction is related to mitochondria. So it's just fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and so is it fair to say that low mitochondria, not having enough mitochondria or not having efficient mitochondria, can pretty much affect the energy in every cell in the body, not just your overall energy, which is what we think about. Like, oh, yeah, I don't have enough energy because I don't have enough mitochondria.
Exactly. I'm tired. I'm fatigued. It's not really about that. It's about your cells are fatigued. Your cells don't have enough energy to do their metabolic activity. And if your cells are not doing their metabolic activity, then there's a host of things that can go wrong. But you're right. It's a function partly of the number of mitochondria and how efficient those mitochondria are, how well those mitochondria are working.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that as people age, right, that their mitochondria, I know it's not a natural occurrence, but because of, you know, choices and insufficiency of nutrients and inability to detoxify, et cetera, that their mitochondria, their numbers of mitochondria change, or is it more the efficiency of their mitochondria that change?
Oh, yeah. The answer is yes. The answer is yes, both.
Their efficiency
and their numbers decline. And one of the things you can see with elderly people is if you get elderly people on a moderate exercise program, they feel so much better. Their propensity to fall and injure themselves, way better. Their ability just to get around in the world, far better. And their mental processes are better. Now, what could we possibly contribute that to? Well, for one thing, when you stress muscles, your muscles go, boy, we need some more energy here. Let's create more mitochondria. And you can actually create more mitochondria in your cells. It's a process called mitochondrial biogenesis. So with the right triggers on those cells, the cell goes, oh, we need to make some more mitochondria here so that we can make more ATP. There you go.
And is that just in the muscle cells that you're exercising, or does that have more of a widespread global effect?
There's a bit of a more widespread global effect, because if you can turn on this one enzyme called PGC1-alpha, if you can turn that on sort of centrally in the body, then you know, you're going to have effects on a lot of cells. So if you have a lot of muscle cells, let's say, and you're turning on that PGC1-alpha in those cells and you're creating more mitochondria, that does kind of tend to bleed over into other cells as well, especially if you're doing that, if you're stimulating that with nutrients and botanicals, because those nutrients and botanicals are going to go to all your cells.
Great. And I want to get to that in a little bit. I want to talk about what specific nutrients and botanicals we can use to help stimulate this, because this is a process that we all want to have working efficiently. When you said that about the exercise, I thought, well, the heart, right? Because the heart is going to have to work a little harder because of the exercise, right? So exercise can actually increase those mitochondria and the efficiency of those mitochondria on the heart, and that might be part of why it's such an important piece for people who are suffering from heart disease or want to prevent heart disease.
Absolutely, yes. Like I said before, if the heart muscle and its mitochondria are not, if you don't have enough and they're not working as well, it can spiral you downhill pretty quick. And so if you have, you know, less heart function, then a lot of other things can go wrong. And you can improve that. You can improve it fairly quickly and fairly efficiently. And like I said, the first thing is just moderate exercise. Enough exercise to get your heart rate up a little bit. Enough exercise to stress you. You know, stress isn't a bad thing.
Right.
If you can stress yourself enough that it creates a response in the body, it creates a biochemical response in those cells, then that's a good thing. That's something that is going to have a positive outcome.
Right. Yeah, eustress versus distress. Makes a lot of sense. So people expect that as they age, they lose muscle mass. And why is it that that happens?
It's partly sort of use it or lose it, and it's partly nutrient based, and it's partly biochemical. So if we feed our cells the right fuel, and if we stress those cells in the right way, then we tend to not lose that muscle mass. What we tend to do as we age is we lose muscle mass, and we have more fatty infiltration into that muscle as well. So you've got less muscle cells, more fat in those muscles, and less muscle cells equals less energy, because those muscle cells are very highly energetic.
Right. So as we So is it fair to say that as people are aging, part of why they're losing muscle mass is, number one, the nutritional deficiencies catch up with them, so to speak, and
absolutely.
Suddenly they're not
yeah,
able to make as much energy? Yeah. So what are some of those foods, nutrients that affect the way that the muscle mass is done, and the mitochondria and the energy, because they're all linked together, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. One of the elements of our fuel that tends to get overlooked, and I think we just don't get enough, especially as we age, is protein.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not getting enough protein, or you're getting an adequate amount of protein, but you're not doing a very good job of breaking that protein down into its most basic elements, which are amino acids, then you can have a problem with your mitochondria. Because when you look at the mitochondria and you look at the most basic element and the most basic biochemical process in mitochondria, it's called the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. For us old school guys, it's the Krebs cycle. But the citric acid cycle, the Krebs cycle, there are a number of nutrients that can plug themselves into that citric acid cycle, but most of those nutrients need to have been broken down previously. So your fats need to be broken down into their smallest components, their smallest elements. And sugars also need to be broken down into just the smallest element, you know, two carbons. And then they can enter that cycle. The
mm-hmm.
cool thing about amino acids is that amino acids can plug themselves into that Krebs cycle at a number of different positions in the Krebs cycle. In fact, those amino acids are cofactors. They're actually cofactors that are necessary for that citric acid cycle to function. And what mm-hmm. happens at the end of the citric acid cycle is you've got sort of energetic elements that can then plug themselves further into the mitochondria, and the end result is more ATP, more energy, more cellular fuel. So if that process isn't working well, if you don't have enough amino acids to plug in there, that can cause degradation of that process and of the mitochondria. And if the mitochondria, and here's the really sad part about this, if the mitochondria aren't doing a very good job of creating energy, if they're not creating ATP very well, instead they create superoxide. They create what are called oxygen radicals or radical oxygen species. And your audience probably knows that, you know, that is one of the things that we try to avoid, because if you are increasing your oxidative load in the body, then your cells all have to use their antioxidants to deal with that oxidative stress. And then
right.
if you use up all your antioxidants, then that oxidative stress also gets the best of you, and you tend to age quicker. So if your mitochondria aren't working properly, you're not making enough energy, and you're creating radical oxygen species that make you age quicker.
So does just the normal functioning of the mitochondria create these oxygen species, radical oxygen species, free radicals?
Yeah.
Or is it just
yeah.
when they're, yeah, yeah.
That's part of the mitochondria. It's weird, but it's part of the mitochondria's job. Your mitochondria is supposed to make ATP, but it's also supposed to create some radical oxygen species. It's supposed to stress the cell a little bit, and that then turns on your antioxidant response element, and you deal with that, and it's just a cascade of events that's supposed to happen. It's just when that gets overwhelmed is when we have a problem and we start basically killing our mitochondria. But there are other things, though, that can create reactive oxygen species in the cell and in the mitochondria. A really bad diet will do that. The standard American diet is geared to do exactly that. So high sugar, high fat diet. Environmental toxicities. Environmental toxicities will damage mitochondria, and they will create a lot of oxidative stress.
Yeah.
So, and then there are some disease processes that will do that as well.
So specific what that your words.
There are some disease, some specific disease processes that will also increase the amount of reactive oxygen in the mitochondria and damage the mitochondria. But it's mostly things that we do to ourselves. You know, it's mostly those things in our lifestyle that are damaging the mitochondria, and then we tend to age quicker when we do that.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of those components? You mentioned the high fat, and I would want to classify high bad fat diet, right? That oxidized and trans fats and
oxidized,
processed
saturated
fats and all that.
Yep.
Yep.
Correct.
Yep. And then
it's not
sugar,
the good fat.
Yeah, because we need that. I guess we need to like really weigh out, because people go and they'll try to do the no-fat diet and get into trouble because they don't have enough of the essential fats that they actually need for mitochondrial function. Yeah.
Well, and in fact, you know, mitochondria like all different kinds of food. So they're okay with sugar and fat and protein. That's totally okay. And when we get into this mindset where, oh, well, I can't do any of that, I have to have a really low-fat diet or a really low-sugar diet. Those things don't really serve the mitochondria very well. The mitochondria is built to deal with all of these things. It's just that our mitochondria become dysfunctional when we overload on any macronutrient, any protein, carbohydrates, and fats. If we do too much of them, which is kind of our typical, you know, the way that we live in the USA, if we're overloading it just with macronutrients, that can cause mitochondrial dysfunction. Glucotoxicity, definitely. If we have too high of a sugar diet, that can damage mitochondria. And too much fat will do that. Not too much protein, really. It's really more sugar and fat. So we really have to watch those. We don't necessarily have to have a super low fat diet or a super low sugar diet, but you know, we don't want to have an overload of that. And as an example of overload, in a presentation that I do, I have a photo of myself at this wonderful little place called Voodoo Donuts in Portland, Oregon, where they serve a bacon maple bar. So there's a photo of myself biting into a bacon maple bar. Showing that, you know, this is macronutrient overload here, folks. And of course, when I did it, it was in moderation. I had one. That's the only one I've had in my lifetime. But any kind of overload of that can damage mitochondria. And then, of course, you know, environmental toxicity, living a really sedentary life, not getting out and exercising, that all can really harm the mitochondria.
Yeah. So let's go back to glucose, because glucose is the fuel that feeds that the mitochondria works to turn into ATP. But on the other hand, you know, I'm a big fan of a no-sugar diet, quite frankly. I don't think any of it in moderation is any good for anybody, because if we're talking sugar without the big package that nature provides us for sugar, you know, like a whole food which has sugar and all the micronutrients and all the antioxidants. But, right, so we get that sugar has to go into the mitochondria, and, of course, it needs oxygen, to, you know, to go fuel the process as well. But then if we eat sugar, like, you know, the standard American diet, you know, you eat the croissant and you eat the sugar in your coffee and whatever else, that sugar has been stripped away of its micronutrients, its B vitamins, its antioxidants, and we just got finished saying how those are required in order to protect the body from the mitochondrial function and also to make the mitochondria work. So I'd just love to hear, you know, some of those nutrients so people know, like, what some of those nutrients are that they have to be making sure that there's plenty of if they really want to age healthfully and not lose their muscle mass.
Right, yeah. I didn't want anybody to take from what I was saying that quality doesn't matter. It's not just about quantity of nutrients, not at all. It's the quality of those nutrients, too. There are proteins that don't digest very well. There are bad fats, and like you said, there are simple sugars that are not in their native form that really aren't meant for human ingestion.
Right. So you talked earlier about specific nutrients and herbs. People love to hear about nutrients and herbs that are going to help them to build more muscle mass, not lose muscle mass, have more energy. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of those.
Some of those nutrients that can support mitochondrial function, some of them are sort of antioxidant-based nutrients. and antioxidant-based phytochemicals from plants, things like curcumin, from the turmeric root. Great antioxidant, as well as having some really profound effects in our cells to turn off certain inflammatory processes, for one thing. And then we've got, there are sulfur-containing compounds that are in broccoli called sulforaphane. And sulforaphane in broccoli, actually, a lot of these, including sulforaphane, stress the cell a little bit. They're actually oxidative in nature. So they're stressing the cell a little bit and causing a positive reaction in the cell, an antioxidant response in the cell. So that's what sulforaphane does, among other things. There's anti-cancer effects and lots of other things that sulforaphane can do, but really fascinating and really can help mitochondrial function. There's a plant element called berberine. If you are taking in golden seal or Oregon grapefruit, the yellow pigment in those plants is called berberine. And berberine can have a positive effect on mitochondrial function. So can quercetin. Quercetin's a flavonoid that's in a lot of good, healthy foods, a lot of fruits and vegetables. Resveratrol, same thing. And resveratrol, similar to the sulforaphane in broccoli, can actually stress the cell a little bit and create this antioxidant response, as well as being an antioxidant itself. Same thing with green tea. I mean, green tea is a great antioxidant. Supports the liver, protects the liver, and does a number of other things. Now, when we talk about nutrients, there are some specific nutrients that are supported for mitochondrial function. One of them is acetyl-carnitine or just L-carnitine, either one of those. L-carnitine is responsible for taking fats that are in the cell and shuttling them into the mitochondria so that they can be burned, so that they can be utilized as fuel. If we don't have enough L-carnitine, that process doesn't work very well. So we can have this great, lovely overload of fat, and we can have tons of fat in the diet, and it's not being utilized because you don't have this shuttle. Alpha-lipoic acid is another one. Alpha-lipoic acid is an antioxidant. It's also a cofactor for that citric acid cycle in the mitochondria. So you don't have enough alpha-lipoic acid, that citric acid cycle isn't going to work as well. Another one is coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is very, very active within the mitochondria. And so you can't get to that end product of ATP if you don't have enough coenzyme Q10. And there are some diets that can deplete you of CoQ10. We actually make some CoQ10 in our bodies, so it's not like a vitamin that we have to get from the diet. We do make some, but there are a number of substances and a number of drugs that will dampen our ability to make coenzyme Q10. One of them is the statin drugs. The cholesterol-lowering statin drugs interfere with our body's ability to make coenzyme Q10. So you don't have enough.
Yeah, so there's a double whammy, right?
You don't have enough. You can't make enough ATP, and you'll damage those mitochondria easier if you don't have CoQ10, because the other thing about CoQ10 is it can also be an antioxidant. Another nutrient here is magnesium. Magnesium is involved in about 300 different biochemical processes and biochemical reactions in the body. It is sort of the universal cofactor for biochemical processes in the body. It's involved in so many of them. And unfortunately, most of us, because of the state of our diet, most of us are deficient in magnesium. So we need to make sure that we're getting enough magnesium. Coenzyme Q10, like I was saying, it's just so important. It's so important for the mitochondria. There are some recent studies showing that coenzyme Q10 improves heart failure. And like I was saying, if your heart is not energetic enough, you can go downhill pretty quick. And one of the elements of that, one of the problems there is heart failure. Heart failure is an energetic process, an energetic problem that can be improved by improving the health of the mitochondria.
You know, it's ironic what you're saying here. So people end up with high cholesterol. They get put on a statin drug to lower their cholesterol. That statin drug then interferes with CoQ10 production. CoQ10 is an important part of the mitochondrial function, so the mitochondria don't work as efficiently, which means that the cardiac muscle loses some mitochondrial function and gets weaker. So we're going on a drug to lower cholesterol with the idea of being good for the heart, when in fact the reactions that it's having are damaging or can be damaging to the heart. Did I miss something there?
Not at all. No, there has been a significant increase since the advent of the cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. There's been a significant increase in cases of heart failure. And it is no coincidence.
It's not a coincidence. You know, it's interesting that poor people are unsuspecting, right? You go to the doctor, you find your cholesterol, you want to protect your heart, they scare you, you start taking the medication, you lower your cholesterol, your tests come back normal, you think you're safe, and then you drop dead because your cardiac muscle can't get enough energy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really, you know, it's stuff that I think people just need to be more aware of. It's so important. What about B vitamins? You didn't mention B vitamins, and I always think B vitamins when I think about mitochondrial function.
B vitamins are important for mitochondrial function as cofactors. So they are nutrient cofactors in so many different biochemical processes. Specific nutrients that have been shown to be supportive for mitochondrial function, you don't usually think of B vitamins necessarily for that. The B vitamins are helpful in helping to break down those foods into their most simple elements, definitely, and they are involved as cofactors in the process here. But right. Other things like N-acetylcysteine has been found to be very important to help mitochondrial function. Again, it's an antioxidant. Melatonin.
Right.
Melatonin as an antioxidant.
Huh?
And melatonin in large enough doses is a pretty strong antioxidant. And the last two I would say here would be branched chain amino acids. Branched chain amino acids are the essential amino acids. That's leucine, isoleucine, and valine are what are called branched chain amino acids. And then there's lysine. That's not a branched chain amino acid, but it works along with them to sort of turn on their ability to have specific effects in the cell. But branched chain amino acids also can be very important for ramping up mitochondrial function and making the citric acid cycle work better. And the last thing here is nicotinamide riboside. This is a fairly new nutrient here, and not fairly new. I mean, it's been around for a long time. It's just we just are learning more about it. It's involved in what's called the NAD process in the cell. NAD is involved as a cofactor in the glycolysis, which is breaking down sugars into the most simple elements, and in the citric acid cycle, and then in the further process called the electron transport chain that ends up finally making ATP. NAD is another one of those elements in the cell that you have to have enough of. If you don't have enough NAD, you run into problems with mitochondrial function. And what we're finding out about this nicotinamide riboside is that it's involved in creating more NAD, and it's the most direct way, supplementally, it's the most direct way to get more NAD happening in the cell. And when you have more NAD happening in the cell, you turn down aging, the aging process, you turn up that PGC1 alpha that I was talking about, and you make more mitochondria.
Sounds like a winner. So when you say, nicotinamide, I mean, I think of niacin, right? It's a form
right.
of niacin.
Yeah, you think nicotinamide.
So that's how
yes.
I was thinking in terms of B vitamins when I said that earlier. But so how is
right,
this a
yeah,
form
yeah.
that's in particular foods, or is this a form that is enzymatically generated? How do people get that?
You can get a very tiny amount of it in milk and in beer. Other than that, it's not in a lot of our foods.
Tell people not to eat.
So So pick your poison there.
Pick your poison.
But it's created in the body when we metabolize things like niacin and niacinamide. It can be sort of a shuttle, an in-between molecule there that can be turned back into NAD. And this nicotinamide riboside, it has effects on the heart. It's cardioprotective. It's liver protective. It turns up the mitochondrial function and creates more mitochondria as well. So it's really amazing stuff. If you're increasing NAD, you're having some really profound effects in the cell. There's a gentleman in at Harvard that's been doing a lot of research on NAD as well as some other molecules in the cell that he's trying to figure out, or has figured out, I think, some of the processes of aging and how to counter them. And he was researching, his name's David Sinclair, and he was researching resveratrol and resveratrol's effect on aging and on fat metabolism and such. And now he's sort of turned his direction and his research over to NAD now, because what we're finding is resveratrol was important. It still is. But resveratrol works hand in hand with NAD.
Mm. So not taking it alone. Interesting. So I just wanted to take a step back just so everybody understands what we mean by cofactors and what this whole Krebs cycle, I call it the Krebs cycle too, Krebs cycle, citric acid cycle, depending on where you were taught it. But you're basically, mm-hmm. it's a transformation, right? You're taking one thing comes in and the other thing comes out. So in a shortcut, the glucose and oxygen go in, mixes around with a bunch of different nutrients. There's a transformation from one part to the next, and out pops the ATP. So all these factors that Dr. Miller's been talking about, like this form of NAD, like some of the B vitamins, riboflavin's another one that's in there, like the magnesium, they're all helping to do that conversion by moving parts of the molecule over and moving certain atoms around, and boom, you get a transformation and you end up with something usable that's ATP. And so that's these cofactors are really, really important in order for that process to happen. And that's one of the reasons I stepped in and said about my objection to sugar is that sugar has all the B vitamins stripped out of it. And it goes in there, and it requires some B vitamins and other nutrients, like lots of other nutrients, in order to actually make it through that cycle. So my understanding is that then when you're eating just the pure sugar in the pure sugar form without that package around it, that you're putting in more substrate to that cycle, but not more of the nutrients required to actually allow it to carry to the end.
That's why we call them empty calories, because yes, they do fit into this process, but they end up stressing the body because they're not giving anything else along with it. That's just, hey, here's some sugar, instead of sugar in its native state in a fruit or grain or something like that, that also gives you all of those other vitamins and minerals. And yeah, when we talk cofactors, really what we're talking about is biochemical transformations in the body that can't just occur on their own. There are enzymes that are involved in every one of these transformations, and those enzymes don't work on their own either. They have to have nutritional cofactors that plug into them to turn them on, to make them work. So that's where the magnesium comes in, and the B vitamins come in, and so many of these things. They plug into those enzymes, and they make the process work.
Awesome, awesome. And some of them mop up the debris at the other end, right? The antioxidants
up. Absolutely.
The mess. The end.
Yep, yeah, everything you make in the body, you're going to eventually unmake.
Yeah. And, you know, in every cell we talk about detoxification, and we think about, you know, the toxins in the environment and in the food. But, you know, the toxins that we generate in our body are pretty substantial. But when we're taking care of the body and providing it what it needs and not over stressing it, then you should be able to just mop it up with the right nutrients that you're taking in as a normal part of what you're doing. So this job, this breakdown of muscle, as we age is not a normal process. It's a pathological process. And it's really, and I mean, I just think about it as this catching up to us, right? The bad nutrition is catching up to us, and then suddenly we can't do it anymore. But we can keep that strong, and you see it. The woman on the picture that we put on the blog is 90 years old, and she's doing something that probably most of us can't do. She's holding her hand, her body up in the air and just balancing on her hands. I can't do that. And she's 90 years old. Do you think she's had age-related muscle loss? Thank you very much. No, she hasn't. So it's common. There's 102-year-old triathletes, and there's a beautiful 75-year-old bodybuilder that looks like, you know, any 20-year-old would love to have her body. So it doesn't have to happen. It's a matter of really how we take care of ourselves. One of the last things I want to talk about, this has been great information, is methylation. Tell us a little bit about what methylation is and how does it fit into this, or does it fit into this whole process of mitochondrial function?
Well, methylation is, in the most simple definition of it, methylation is the body taking a carbon, just a carbon atom, and three hydrogen atoms, and transferring it from one substance to another substance. It's a very, very simple process, and it happens over and over in our bodies 24 hours a day. However, what we're finding is that some of us don't do the methylation process as efficiently as other people. And there are genetic reasons why some of us don't, and there are lifestyle reasons why some of us don't. So if you're not methylating properly, if those methylation reactions aren't occurring the way that they should, it can have some really profound effects on a lot of the biochemical processes in the body, and a lot of the things that that we need to make in the body, and a lot of the things that we need to metabolize and break down in the body. So if the other thing that methylation can affect is gene transcription, which is our ability to turn on or turn off specific genes so that good biochemical processes happen and we turn off potentially bad things from happening like cancer. Mm-hmm. So it's a very simple process, but it's a little complicated at the same time. One of the things that many people focus on is folate, or what I use the generic term folate. I don't like calling it folic acid. Folic acid is the synthetic inactive version of the active folate that we use in our tissues. The MTHFR you were talking about, the nasty text message acronym.
Yes.
The MTHFR, it's methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase. Anything that ends in an ASE is an enzyme. So this is an enzyme that takes inactive folate, whether it's from the diet or from supplementation, and it converts it into the active tissue-ready form of folate called 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, or 5-MTHF. 5-MTHF is what works in our cells as folic acid or as folate, and it's involved in methylation. It's involved in transferring a carbon from here to there. So 5-MTHF, one of its jobs here is to take a carbon and hand it off to a methyl group, which is the carbon and three hydrogens, and it hands it off to B12. And then B12 hands it off to an amino acid called homocysteine. And this is where I got into this almost 20 years ago, was I started researching homocysteine. There were some researchers that were just at that time just looking into what happens when you have too high of a level of homocysteine in your body. Well, for one thing, you get nerve damage. Another thing, you get heart disease. So that was the initial research here. So we have to deal with this amino acid metabolite, this homocysteine. If you can't methylate it, then you will have higher levels, and you'll have an increased risk for cardiovascular disease, for heart attacks and strokes, for things like miscarriages and a number of other different processes and problems here. Those are the big ones, though. So we have to deal with homocysteine, and if we're not methylating properly, we're not dealing with homocysteine very well. So this whole methylation, it's like I said, it's folate, it's B12, it's homocysteine, and then it's called something called S-adenosylmethionine. S-adenosylmethionine, or SAMe, is what's called the universal methyl donor in the body. It's the element that most often will take that carbon and hand it off from one thing to another. So in a biochemical reaction, it'll take a carbon here, thank you very much, and hand it over here to something else. And the so what on that is, if that's not working properly, then we're not making enough of some amino acids, carnitine, taurine, cysteine. We already talked about carnitine and how important it is for the mitochondria, burning fats, right? Taurine,
yeah.
Very important for heart muscle function. Cysteine as well, for heart muscle function, for detoxification in the liver, for making glutathione, which is an antioxidant, and on and on. And the other thing that's really important here is neurotransmitters. If you're not methylating properly, you don't make neurotransmitters the way that you should. So your serotonin and melatonin, melatonin helps you sleep, serotonin helps you calm down, those don't get made properly if you're not methylating properly.
Yeah. So this is all
and
wrapped
the other, on the other side.
Together.
Oh, yeah. And on the other side of that is your adrenal hormones, your adrenal neurotransmitters, your adrenaline. It doesn't get made properly sometimes, and sometimes, depending on your problem with methylation, you don't break it down very efficiently. So you end up being just hyper and anxious and inability to deal with coffee and caffeine and things like that. There are a number of different ways that these things can go wrong, all because you're not taking a carbon and handing it off very, very efficiently. So the main problem with that we've found is that is genetics. At least 60% of our population in North America have a genetic mutation that makes it so they don't handle that methylation process as efficiently as other people. It's about 60, maybe higher than 60% of the population. Then there's a smaller percent of the population that does it really poorly. And it just depends on whether mom or dad gave you a good gene or a bad gene. If
yep.
If mom gave you a good gene, dad gave you a bad gene, then you've still got about 50% ability of that folate methyl transferring happening properly. If mom and dad both give you bad genes for that methyl transferase process, then you're not going to do it very well.
Yeah.
So that increases the risk for cardiovascular disease and neurologic diseases and neurotransmitter problems and depression and anxiety and so many other things.
Right, right. And so let's just be, you paint a picture of gloom and doom. Like 60, it seems like really odd that 60% of the population would have a mutation, like something that's wrong in this. It's almost like, how did that happen? Like, do you have any thoughts on that, given all the research you've done? Because it's like usually if there's something that a lot of people have, it's like 30%. Wow, that's a lot of people have mm-hmm. that problem, right? But 60%, it almost seems like those are the normals and the other 40%. Like, did we do something to make that happen?
Good question. One of the things that we know here is that you can you can't really change your DNA. You're
right.
Dealt what you're dealt. You can change how it's expressed. It's called
right.
epigenetics. That's the whole the term for that. The whole study of it is epigenetics. So we can make some changes in our lifestyle, in our nutrients, and how we take care of ourselves that not only can turn some of these processes back on, but they can have that effect in future generations as well. There have been some animal studies that have looked at this that have shown that if you give the proper nutrients, the proper cofactors, it can turn these processes back on, and it can make the offspring also turn those processes back on. Really fascinating stuff.
That's good stuff. That's really good stuff. So we're just about out of time here, and I just would like to like bring this to some, action. I always like to have some actions people can take as a result of what they've heard. So what are some takeaways that you would like people to just, you know, consider doing?
One of the things that I recommend that people do is know where you stand when it comes to methylation. Know where you stand. Know what your genetics are. It's really easy and it's inexpensive to do genetic testing these days and to find out if you have this problem with MTHFR or some of the other enzymes that are involved in methylation, in detoxification, in the metabolism of hormones and so many other things. You can do something like the 23andMe.com, and there are other ones like that, where it's about $100 to get this testing done. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's amazing how inexpensive it's become.
It really is. Yeah, it's the price of these has come down so much, and you know, you can do some study on your own and kind of figure out what these enzymes are and what these nutrient cofactors are that are involved in them, or you can go to somebody that's really well versed in interpreting these tests, and then you can look at this and you can see where you stand. Okay, am I somebody that methylates really well? Am I somebody that doesn't methylate very well? And do I have a problem with this MTHFR? If you do, then you should be supplementing with the active form of folate, always the 5-MTHF, and not the inactive folic acid. And there are some other cofactors and things that you can do there as well. And then back to our mitochondria. Moderate exercise, taking some of these supplemental cofactors, eating a really good diet that's got a wide variety of antioxidants and good nutrients in it, and good, really good colorful. I like a colorful diet. If you're looking at vegetables and fruits especially, a lot of different colors, a lot of different pigments, because each of those pigments gives you different phytochemicals. So the greens and oranges and reds and blues and purples are all giving you different phytochemicals that all have beneficial effects in the body. And then adequate protein, and you can even supplement with sort of pre-digested amino acids. And if you really want to get the mitochondria kick-started and jump-started, go ahead and plug that the amino acids right in there. And then things like nicotinamide riboside can be very, very helpful.
Great. And I'm just going to plug in there with the amino acids and the protein. It's, you got to make sure you're digesting your protein. And it's not a matter of just not taking in enough, because I would say the majority of people do actually take in enough, but they've so compromised their ability to make stomach acid, and they're so compromised their ability to make digestive enzymes because of the heavy load on their system and so many other factors that we don't have time to get into today. But so it's really making sure that your digestion is working really well, because otherwise whatever foods you put in are just going to rot in your belly and create problems of their own, and toxins and oxidative byproducts and all that.
No doubt. If you look at the most popular drug that's available that people are taking in our country, the most popular type of medication is the anti-acid type of medication.
Yeah.
The Pepcids and Prevacids and Tagamets and all of those that block stomach acid, because we have been told, and unfortunately many of us have bought into this fact or this theory here, that what is causing your indigestion is that you are making too much acid.
Yeah.
And so we are blocking our ability to digest proteins by dampening the amount of acid that we have in our stomach. So you have to have acid in the stomach or you're not going to break those proteins down.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah. It's a mess.
It's not an acid overload problem.
No, it's very rarely. I mean, we see that every now and then, but it's a really rare situation. So it's great. It's usually the opposite. All right. So let me just see if Lynn has fielded any questions from our audience. Why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you? And you did mention to look for people who can help with the mitochondria. Is that something that you know of people that do, or is it something that you do yourself?
It's not something I'm not practicing at this time, so it's not something that I'm doing. There are a lot of functional medicine practitioners that will do this type of work. Institute for Functional Medicine just had their annual conference right there in Austin, just in late May.
So
I met a lot of local docs that are doing this type of work. In fact, that annual conference in Austin was all about epigenetics. It was all about methylation and epigenetics and how we can have an effect, a positive effect on these processes in the body.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. That's something that we do. We are teaching programs to, we have a year long coaching program for people. And one of the things we do is we help them to reinterpret their epigenetic, their genetic markers and create diet and lifestyle plans around that. So I just thought you had some, you know, somebody in particular in mind that you could just call up and say,
besides
this is the expert to go to. Besides me.
I would say
I don't
Dr.
have any room for one-on-one. Yeah. Just find me. I don't have time for as much of that. So I'm always looking for somebody that would be a good referral. So anyway, that's great. And just tell people how they can get a hold of you and you know, all that. So go for that.
You can find out more information about Thorn Research at thorn.com. And if you have any questions or need to get a hold of anybody here, myself included, just info@thorn.com.
Great.
Thorn,
T-H-O-R-N-E. I use a lot of Thorn products, by the way. And, you know, people ask me, what are some of my favorite supplement companies? And I always say Thorn as one of the top ones because of the quality of the ingredients and the research that's behind it. So for people who are always asking me, well, what kind of vitamin C should I get? And what kind of this should I get? Thorn is usually a good place to at least start for looking for some of those nutrients. I'm going to get Lynn to see if there's any questions. Have you checked the chat if there's anybody has any questions for Dr. Miller?
Not right now. If anybody is online and would like to ask a question, press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that will raise your hand and we'll know to open up your line and you can talk to them directly. And so there it goes. Somebody is right on right now. If you are on the web and you want to call in, the number is 424-243-9555. And again, press 1 on your telephone keypad. If you prefer to just type in your question and you're on the web, just go to the bottom of your page, type your question in, and I'll make sure it's asked.
Fantastic. So we have someone in the 510 area code. Go ahead and state your name and ask your question.
Hi, it's Antoinette. I always have questions.
That's good.
My question is in regards to muscle mass. I don't know so much about aging. I have, as I've been telling everyone, been experiencing muscle loss in my buttocks and with a burning sensation. And I don't know if it's from a pinched nerve, SIBO. It's a phenomenon, and I want to know, have you ever heard of anything like this?
Sometimes muscle loss in the legs and in the buttocks is a problem with what you're calling a pinched nerve. It can definitely create loss of function and loss of muscle mass just in those areas. I think Dr. Rita Marie is probably more well-versed in that area than I am because of your specific training.
Well, how do I build it back up? Once I resolve this problem, I don't want the loss permanent. I need to know how to resolve. Can I build muscle back up?
You know, I think making sure that the nutrients are intact is one good thing, but also, you know, anytime you've had muscle loss as a result of either an injury or inactivity in that particular area, sometimes that happens when you're broken arm or whatever, you do have to do rehab work and specific exercises for building back those muscles, assuming you've brought back the function. So I would certainly get evaluated by somebody who can hands-on look at it, you know, a chiropractor, physical therapist, a naturopath, osteopath, something like that, who can actually examine you and see what's causing it and determine that. And once you've figured out what the cause is and removed the cause, of course, there's nutrients that help you build things back, and then you have to exercise the area because that's the way the body builds back muscle.
Yeah. I'm in the process of trying to get that figured out.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You were going to say something, Dr. Miller? Did you have something to add to that?
No, I think you covered it quite well. And if there is nerve damage that's then causing muscle loss, if you can possibly, if it's a functional problem and you can get to that and fix it, then yeah, you can get that muscle mass back.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. Well, we are out of time for today. Thank you for your question, Antoinette. I appreciate it. We're out of time, and I so appreciate it. I'm going to open up Dawn's line again. She had a little noise in her background. Did you have anything you wanted to say in closing, Dawn?
No, I didn't. Thank you very much for adding us to your lineup today. We sure did enjoy visiting with you and supporting you and your radio show and your practice.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was great information. We haven't had a show on mitochondria yet, so this is a first. So this is cool. So thank you again.
We do have a question.
Okay.
There's somebody last minute here.
This is the last question because it's already at time. So I will open up the line. 707.
Hi, it's Beverly.
Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I have a question, a quick one. It's kind of related to Antoinette's question about the muscle loss in the lower portion of the body. I've experienced that a lot of my life. And I had learned recently that it can also be a result of a viral or bacterial infections like Lyme or other various viruses and bacteria. And I was just wondering if you felt, you know, in your research, if the mitochondria have been damaged by those things, if in fact we can rebuild the muscle again, or what? That's one question, part one of it, and then part two is what would you do to combat that if that was the case?
Well, the very first thing that we need to do is figure out just what it is, you know, what is causing the problem. If it is a virus, then trying to eradicate that virus would be the absolute best thing you could do, because it's most likely having an effect on the mitochondria, and that's why you're getting the muscle loss. And then after the fact, it's providing those nutrients and those cofactors that we talked about before and the amino acids to see if we can turn on that process of mitochondrial biogenesis and make more mitochondria so that we can get that muscle tissue to respond and get the muscle mass back.
Okay, so if it was never really formed, if you had this issue most of your life, do you think that you can still develop muscle where you may have, you know, been affected by this, if this were in fact the case?
That's such a specific question. Honestly, I have to say I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know if it's going to be possible or not.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, the only thing you do is try. You know, what you want to do is always get to the root cause, get rid of the root cause, do the mop up and clean up, and then rebuild. And the rebuilding part would be, like, if you start doing very specific targeted exercises for a specific area where you want to rebuild a muscle, and it's not happening, there's either, you know, several things possible. It's you don't have the right raw materials, the right nutrients to build it up, and that would be things like amino acids and the vitamins and magnesium and the different things that form collagen, you know, specifically the collagen-forming amino acids. And then it might be that there is some damage to the actual mechanisms for rebuilding and repairing, and there may be some scar tissue or whatever. But the only way you're going to know is to really, you know, break it down step by step. Figure out what the root cause is, eliminate the root cause, do the cleanup and re-nutrify and rebuild.
Great. Thank you. Fair enough. Good advice.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you, everybody. This has been the Vibrant Health Solutions Radio Show. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we're going to be back again in the coming weeks. We usually hear the same time, same station, so like us on or become friends with us on Blog Talk Radio so you get notified whenever we have a new show and a new guest. And I appreciate you for being here and taking time out of your busy day. We've had Dr. Alan Miller and Dawn Aubrey. And my many blessings. Thank you very much. And you can visit us at drritamarie.com. Bye-bye now.